Hi, I'm Jack from Socrates, and I'm at the radio station with my sister Katie. You're listening to WGXC Aqua. Have a nice day!
Hi there, this is Justin Weaver.
And Holly Tanner.
From Something to Talk About, be sure to catch our guest on Wednesday, November 23rd at 10 a.m.
That's right, a special show for a very special guest, Congressman Chris Gibson, and his wife Mary Jo will be here in studio for what may very well be his last radio interview as a sitting congressman.
Be sure to tune in live at 10 a.m. here on our show, Something to Talk About, on 90.7 FM, WGXC.
People are talking.
The Red Dot Restaurant and Bar is proud to support WGXC, located at 321 Warren Street in Hudson, New York, a world-inspired American bistro operating for over 16 years. Visit us on Facebook or at reddotrestaurant.com. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving Eve. You're listening to Something to Talk About here on 90.7 FM WGXC. Welcome, welcome. I, of course, am Holly Tanner, and I am running solo today. Deep sympathies and thoughts and prayers to Justin, my co-host, Justin Weaver, and his family and the Brown family. Justin's not here today due to an untimely death in the family. So our thoughts and prayers go out to Justin and his family, and he'll be back next time. So this is kind of interesting for me, however, as I have my special guests today. Congressman Chris Gibson and his lovely wife, Mary Jo, are here. And Chris was one of my first interviewees, and now we know it's not his last radio interview, but it's his last one here. He's not going to go on any other show. Sorry, Vern Cross. he might be on another radio station, but his last one here. So I'm so excited and happy that you can join us this morning, guys. That's
Hello,
great.
Excited to be with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, and I don't know how you don't know, if you don't know Congressman Gibson, I'm not sure what you've been doing, but a little background, 24 years in the Army, colonel, deployed 7 times, 4 combat tours to Iraq, deployments to Kosovo, southwestern U.S. for counter-drug operation, and just prior to your retirement in Haiti, you were deployed with the 82nd Airborne Division 2nd Brigade Combat Team during the opening month of humanitarian relief operations. You've earned Legions of Merit, 4 Bronze Stars, a Purple Heart, Combat Infantry, I can't speak this morning. Badge with star, a master parachutist badge. I didn't know that one. I don't think you've jumped out of a plane.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. You retired in 2010, came home to Kinderhook, and then decided that, hey, you know, I've spent my life serving the public, and I want to do it again. Decided to run for Congress in 2010. You won, reelected in 2012 and 2014. And you've also been married to Mary Jo, who is a New York State licensed clinical social worker for 20 years. And you have 3 children, Katie, Maggie, and Connor. And here you are.
Yeah.
My goodness, Chris.
And I got my beautiful bride with me here, who's a licensed clinical social worker, works at the VA, helping veterans, and does individual and group therapy, and also is a part-time instructor at Empire State College, teaching courses such as crisis intervention, grief and loss, Anne is a super mom of three and an amazing wife.
Is a super mom and quite accomplished in her own right. Absolutely. As you mentioned, working at the VA, but she also was a founding co-chair of the U.S. Congressional Spouse Group on Suicide Prevention and Education. And Mary Jo has been on the show as well before and also on Drive Time as well. Talking about the suicide walk and other issues in regards to that.
Thank you so much for allowing us.
So thanks for being here, guys. So your term is almost over, Chris.
We're almost
there. What do you think?
Well, first of all, thanks very much for having us on, and good day to everybody out there as we get ready for Thanksgiving. And we got a nice day for it. It's beautiful. Hope you're having a good day. I still have a little bit more to do. We've got a couple of bills I'm part author of that I think are very important for the American people. One's on national security. I sit on the Armed Services Committee. And certainly of the mind that it's not a good idea to lay off 70,000 troopers, which is the Obama administration's plan. And we need to change the law or else that's going to happen. So I authored a bill about 10 months ago, and it gained bipartisan support. I had Tulsi Gabbard, Sergeant Major Retired Walls, who's the highest-ranking enlisted man to ever serve in the U.S. House, Seth Moulton. And then, of course, pretty universal support on the Republican side, and we passed it in the U.S. House. We're in discussions with the Senate now. It looks good. That we'll actually get a conference report, and it'll go to the president's desk. Now, last year, when we were in a similar situation, the president initially vetoed our bill. Ultimately, he had to accept it, and that was a good thing, I think, for our national security. I'm a big believer in peace through strength, and to do that, you need to have the world's most formidable military. And I think once you do that, you think about, growing up and what that does is, when you're a teenager, who goes up and punches the biggest guy in school?
Right.
Well, nobody really does that, right? So that's what we want to do is, we want to have a very strong military and then hopefully lead with our greatest strengths, which are actually our ideas, instantiated in our founding document, diplomacy. So this bill that I've authored actually, I think, helps support that, and I think it looks good. So we'll know in the next week or 10 days whether or not that we'll have to see what the president does. But I think that, if he's looking at the results of the election, I think he'll sign the bill. Because the American people, I think, believe in peace through strength. And the other bill is actually is a healthcare-related bill. Look, we can argue about Obamacare till the cows come home.
Sure.
I think it's everybody knows where I am on that. But, we've got a very important bill that helps keep people healthier longer. It's called 21st Century Cures. It's investments as it relates to cancers and heart disease and Alzheimer's and those on the spectrum and those suffering from chronic Lyme conditions. Our bill is important research that we think will ultimately bring forward cures and solutions, and that will keep people healthier longer and happier longer and save us money as it relates to the maladies and treating. So that bill, we think there's a good chance we're going to get that to the president's desk, and we believe he will sign that one when it gets there. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, we're still involved. Of course, Army guy, we're going to run right through the tape. So, busy day yesterday in Albany initially for constituent meetings and then to Kingston where I visited Gateway. This is an awesome entity that helps Americans with disabilities, intellectual and physical and developmental disabilities, and then took a series of constituent meetings in the Kingston office. So, we still have another 6 weeks worth of work. Look forward to, and we're in transitions with John Faso.
Right.
Congratulations to John and Mary Fran on a big win.
John, that's right.
And, so we're, we've already seen that he's going to keep some of my staff, and that's going to help with continuity.
Right.
John and I have met personally. We've talked about this handover, and, this is a similar experience to being in the Army as far as making sure you set up your successor for success. So we're working very hard to make sure that that happens. And Mayor, any comments?
No, I think we moved from Chris serving in the military and then transitioning to serving in Congress. And it was fairly seamless in that, I think he heard the call and he answered it. And I think with constituents, everything he's done, his bills that he's helped to write and co-author and support have been constituent driven, and I think that has been essential, hearing the needs of the district and serving well. So we really have had a remarkable experience doing this together as a couple, and support and all of our family supporting Chris in this effort to serve others, and we've.
The morning train is
and
going
the train
by, and
agrees I agrees with us.
I should say to listeners that our showtime actually had moved to 2 p.m. But so don't check your clocks; it's not 2 o'clock. It is 10 after 10 on Wednesday morning, and we had made arrangements with Chris and Mary Jo that they would come in at 10 before the time change. And
it's all
and this,
good.
The station
like
agreed, but so we get the train in the morning, which is fine. They're
we go with
tooting
that.
Their support of it's everything good. You said, and that's right. We like to see the commerce moving via trains.
That's, exactly.
So are
exactly.
you going to miss all of this, Chris?
Well, look,
because you are. You're one of the busiest people. Yeah. And also, you know, you're not just doing it because you have to. I think you do it because you want to.
Oh,
you
yeah.
want
the
constituent
the
contact. You're well, huge on that aspect. And
absolutely. You know, the good book tells us there's a time for everything under the sun. And, you know, we would change none of this. If we had to do it all again, this has been a great privilege to serve. You know, these past 6 years, this has been a movement. You mentioned I got elected. It was actually we got elected. You know, I came out of the Army and I was known by, well, next to no one. And I was up against an incumbent and I only had
right.
7 months. So even Washington, the National Republican Party, is like, look, man, we like your military career. Good for you. You're awesome. You're not going to win this election. Well, we thought otherwise, but it was really a movement. I mean, there's so many people. You were my county coordinator here in Columbia County, and we empowered people all throughout what was then the 10 counties of the 20th Congressional District
right.
and surprised people. You know, even 6 weeks out, Siena Poll had us down 17 points. And, you know, it was interesting because right before that, we were having a hard time getting coverage from the TV channels.
Sure.
You know, they weren't that interested. And all of a sudden, the poll comes out, and I'm down 17 points. Oh, yeah, they wanted to see me then. They wanted
sure.
to see, you know, how I felt
how
about
handling
losing
that. Yeah.
so badly. And, you know, I think they expected me to be angry or whatever. But, you know, they looked at me, and I said, I got to work harder. I mean, we're just going to work harder. We're going to really look to reach out and connect with people. And that's what we did. We didn't panic. We didn't take counsel of our fears. And, you know, 6 weeks later, we not only made up those 17 points, but our team, we won by 10 points.
Yeah.
So, you know, what sent me to Washington, I think, were three basic goals that the people sent me there to do. Is one is work on the economy. Second is to work to get back to a balanced budget. And three is to protect this exceptional way of life. And you look at the day that the people sent me to Washington, unemployment rate then, in November of 2010 was 10%. And certainly we're not satisfied where we are today, but unemployment now is under 5%. We've cut that in half. And here in Columbia County, unemployment rate's about 3.5%. Green
mm-hmm.
County listeners, about 5% over there. And we have Dutchess and Ulster County listeners as well. But the Hudson Valley, we are growing. First time in 50 years, you're seeing an increase in the number of family farms. And that's a good thing. We see some new businesses opening up to support our people and farms. And I think that's encouraging. You know, so on that number one priority, we're not where we want to be, but there isn't any doubt that this movement made a difference. We stopped a lot of the very onerous legislation that was coming out of Washington. We started to move in a different direction that empowers. Look at taxes. You know, they said that there's no way we'd be able to keep the temporary tax rates of 2001 and 2003 that cut all of our middle class taxes significantly. We got that into permanent law. That happened.
Right.
And you think about what the cost of a gallon of gas was in 2010. It was over $4.
Crazy.
So look, the government doesn't set the price. Of course not. But the
right.
government can do things that make it more conducive to lowering prices by
sure.
expanding supply. And that's what we did. We expanded supply. It had a dynamic change on the market. And with that increase in energy sources, we saw the price of a gallon of gas now not quite half, but, I mean, you know, it's significantly lower. And that's like as I was explaining when I first got elected to my colleagues, I said, look, when you drop the price of a gallon of gas, it's like a tax cut to working class
sure.
people. I grew up in a family like this because it's going right from your, you know, your paycheck into your gas tank. So that and home heating, I think that was important. So on the number one issue of growing the economy, we helped move it in the right direction. We have further to go. On the issue of the deficit, look, the annual deficit, the day I was elected, was approaching $1.5 trillion. That was unimaginable. It was certainly unsustainable, and it was immoral. You know, it's generational theft. We had to stop that. We have, working together, we have moved back towards a balanced budget. The annual deficit this year should come in about $450 billion, which is still too high, but it represents a 70% reduction in the deficit. And we are within arm's length of a balanced budget. We need to continue on this path. So on that second issue of getting back to a balanced budget, our team, our cause, has delivered. We have significantly reduced the deficit. And I must say that as exciting and as excited as we are about the prospects, a lot of promises were made in this campaign we just went through. And I'm just concerned that, as you know, Republicans, we can't lose sight of the fact that in an era of divided government, together we cut the deficit by 70%. And with all the pledges, and there were many, infrastructure, defense, and all these things are important. I don't want to see, under united, unified Republican government, we better not see the deficit go up. So, I mean, I've talked to leadership on that. We got to keep an eye on it.
How do you feel about this past election?
Well,
Chris,
look, I mean,
I'm
excited about the possibilities that we're actually going to be responsive to what the American people want. They want to see us. You know, we were an exceptional nation at birth. We were different from the rest of the world. We formed a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. And, you know, with the citizen at the center. And this was the idea of limited government. And it was the idea that, you know, an individual had God-given rights, of which government then is instituted to secure them, and that we promote freedom and opportunity. And so, you know, we're different from Europe. So when people say, well, why can't we be more like Europe? No, we were different from Europe for a reason. And so that's where I think you're going to see in the next several years is us to move towards smarter government, which means less regulation and smarter regulation where it's necessary. And I think that's when I look at our economy. I've always said the analogy is it's like a thoroughbred. I mean, thoroughbred's meant to gallop. A thoroughbred is meant to run. And, you know, when we see our economy coming in at 2% GDP growth, we've saddled that thoroughbred with too much weight. And we can't run. I mean, look, so I'm actually encouraged that you'll see some pro-growth reforms. I think you'll see tax reform ultimately. And, you know, the regulatory relief and reform is going to be important. I do think, you know, world-class economy needs world-class infrastructure. We passed a very important bill in our time that I served in the Congress, and it's going to be good for the American people. Trump's talked about doing beyond that. I'm certainly open to that as long as it's paid for.
Mm-hmm.
We got to figure out a way, and I think there is a way to link it to tax reform where this money that's overseas comes back to the United States at a discounted rate, providing that it goes into infrastructure, roads and bridges, water and sewer, broadband expansion.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to wait and see on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, the third thing I was sent there to do was protect this exceptional way of life. And from my seat of the armed services, I've tried to, you know, quite candidly change our party. Because I think that after 9/11, we became captured by a movement called neoconservatism, which I don't think is conservative at all, and it was too quick to use military force. And so I have worked to strengthen our military and change our outlook on when it's used. I think I have made a difference. I mean, I've noticed that there's a change on that score, and you certainly saw that in the campaign. You saw candidate Trump say, look, we were too quick to use force.
Yeah,
and so I hope he follows through on that. And then beyond those three major issues, Holly, I would say that I was there sent as a representative. And so I listened carefully to what the people were saying. As Mary Jo mentioned at the outset, we authored legislation that reflected the concerns and the desires of our people, whether it be combating Lyme disease, dealing with the aftermath.
You were a huge champion of Lyme disease, which in Columbia County is the largest, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
The epicenter of Lyme is in Columbia County, and you were a huge champion of that.
Well, and, you know, that bill I mentioned, that 21st Century Cures, I think, has landmark legislation to help us change the guidelines, which is really, in my view, the proximate cause of our issues right now, because the narrow guidelines cause us to misdiagnosis, to maltreat, and to really we end up with you know, individuals with big bills because insurance companies aren't paying for them. When I ask the insurance companies, how come you're not helping? How come you're not paying for more of this? They say, well, you know, if it was approved care, then we pay for more of it. So now we're back to the guidelines. That's why this bill that we authored is so important, and I think it's got very strong prospects of going into law. And, you know, across the full spectrum, you know, issues we have worked, broadband expansion, storm relief, helping farmers.
Farmers,
you know, that was all constituent driven, I have to say. I mean, as much as there isn't a dairy product I don't love. I mean, I love the milk, the ice cream too much, you know, all the stuff, the yogurt.
Speaking to the dairy princess.
Who doesn't? Yes, that's great to hear.
Dairy princess. Well,
yeah, but I mean, I had so much to learn. And so when I got home, I want to thank Eric Ooms out there and his brother Tim and certainly Dad Adrian.
Yeah.
They helped school me. I went to dairy boot camp. You know, I got up 3 a.m, went and milked cows, had to clean up after them, work the feed, learned the books. And all of that helped, and then that was the dairy side of it. And then Lindsay Shute, husband Ben, they've got the Hardy Roots Farm down in Claremont. They helped teach me so much about how I could be helpful to farmers. And what they taught me became law, because we were able to get it written into the Farm Bill. And, you know, a lot of people, they'll say, well, you know, politics, it's all about the lobbyists. Well, look, Lindsay Shute is a farmer. She's not a lobbyist, and she helped. She was instrumental in helping draft language that actually went into law that's helping facilitate the growth of our agricultural economy. I applaud her. And that's illustrative of a lot of these veterans issues that I worked. These issues came directly from our veterans who came to me and said, Chris, we got to have a change in policy here. We need casework there. And we gave them a voice. And I'm proud of that, that we really did our best to serve everyone and to help, you know, restore faith in our ability to be self-governing, and I think that's really important.
Are you interested in taking a phone call?
Sure.
Oh.
Okay, because we have a dear friend of mine and one of my wonderful colleagues in the county clerk world, Brad Kendall, who is also the president of the
Brad
Clerks
Kendall.
Association, on the line. Let's see if I can get him. Well, hold on. Let's see. Brad, are you there? Brad? Lynn?
Hey, Brad Kendall, Dutchess County clerk from town of Dover. Great American.
Guy.
Awesome wife, Barb.
We'll be right with you, Brad.
Yeah. I actually wanted to add on to what Chris
is
saying.
Yes, please.
The congressional team, the staff, is amazing in their ability for their constituent care.
Amen.
That was one thing that Chris wanted to emphasize and take care of, obviously, is the casework of the constituents. And his staff, bar none, made that a major priority. So,
absolutely.
And over 50% of the cases are veteran cases. But he really, that staff is unbelievable in how much they take care of the constituents. And all people can walk in. And I think it's important for people to know that's something you need to do, is go to your member of Congress, advocate for yourself. Or if you need something to be taken care of and say you're not getting the benefits you are entitled to, maybe as a veteran, or say it's an immigration issue, you go to your member of Congress because they are there to help. And constituent services that have been provided through his staff has been unbelievable. And I hear it all the time in all different places.
You're absolutely
correct.
And I
think that is just essential to point out,
Mary Jo. Absolutely.
Absolutely so. And, you know, as we were getting spun up back in 2010 after the election, you know, the guidance I gave, you know, my chief was, you know, we need to hire people who love people.
Mm.
Because, you know, if it lands on our desk, chances are the easy solutions have been tried.
Right.
So, you know, we needed people who can cut through the bureaucracy, that can deal with adversity and ultimately get to a yes. May have to take 6 no's first,
mm-hmm.
but ultimately get to a yes. And so, you know, I would say that certainly you want competent people, and absolutely they need to be integrous, but they also need to love people.
Right. And absolutely. I've sent numerous people to Anne up in Kinderhook in regards to passport issues. And you also helped an employee of mine with her helping her husband immigrate to this country.
Yeah.
So, you know, certainly that is a huge, and as a county clerk, and I know Brad agrees with me. I think you're on the line now, Brad.
I am, Holly.
Customer service is a huge importance
Hey, Brad.
County clerks, isn't it? Thanks for calling in. What's up, Brad?
Well, I just wanted to call in. I'm Holly, as you know, Dutchess County Clerk.
Yes.
And President of the Clerks Association, and I wanted to thank the Congressman for his years of service, his collaboration with the clerks. Even just last month, here's a guy who could phone it in, but he was out in Delaware County honoring Sharon O'Dell for her service, and I'm sure she'll remember that, and we sure appreciate it.
Absolutely, we do.
Hi, Brad. You know, I thank you for your leadership. You know, certainly 62 counties across New York State, and you are the leader for the year for our clerks. We know Holly's done that in the past, and, you know, you're looked up to throughout the state and certainly in Dutchess County. You represent all that's good in our country in terms of the way you, with humility, that you serve every day and with thoroughness. And I've really enjoyed our friendship, I must say, in your capacity as the clerk, but also you and your bride, Barb. I think you're wonderful people, and thank you for hosting me out there in Dover. I've always enjoyed your parades, and, you know, you certainly allowed me to get to know the people of Dover, and I just want to express my gratitude for you.
Well, I only have one complaint about the parades. You make the rest of us look lazy.
I can vouch for that. Flag day here in Hudson.
Back and forth across the highway is pretty amazing.
He sprints.
Yeah. He does do that. And I have to say, Brad is doing an excellent job as the president of the Clerks Association, so much so that he proposed extending his term, the term of president, and we all agreed.
Yeah, well, I was actually trying to shorten it, but it didn't work out that way.
Well, you know, yeah, we weren't going for that, Brad. But, well, thanks for
calling
in.
Happy Thanksgiving, Brad.
Yeah, can I share one more thing with
sure.
you?
Please.
Chris is absolutely one of our favorite naturalization speakers.
Oh, yes.
And he was down here at the ceremonial courthouse and was having a little problem with the gate. And instead of going around or anything else, he leapt over the fence in front of the bench, landed on his feet, and delivered a tremendous address.
Nice!
I'll tell you what, that was a mistake. Because I realized later that fence actually moved, and that could have ended really badly. Fortunately, it did not.
So, in addition to remembering your words of wisdom, I'm sure the new citizens will always remember the congressman leaping over the gate.
His athletic ability as well. That's awesome. Great story. We're glad it worked out well. You didn't take a tumble there, yeah. Congressman.
Thank you. So thank you, Beth.
Congressman, my best wishes in the future. You're going off to a wonderful college to lecture, and
well, I know you know it well.
I'll be able to stop in and see one of those.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you so much, Brad, and best wishes to your family.
Thanks, Brad.
Thanksgiving.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was nice hearing from Brad Kendall, the Dutchess County Clerk. And, you know, we do hear a lot of that. You've done a remarkable job. And I think what Mary Jo was saying before in regards to the constituent service aspect of it is that it is all walks of life, any political persuasion, you know, if you need help, you're there for them. And I think that, you know, and it's proven in your election numbers, you know, you had a lot of cross-party support for someone. And you know, can you speak to that for a little bit? Where do you think that comes from, Chris?
Well, that really goes to a core goal that we had, too, which is, you know, I term limited myself in the very beginning. And
which is another bone of contention, but we'll get there in a minute.
But, you know, really working to restore faith in our ability to be self-governing, as busy as everyone's lives are, and no doubt even today, the day before Thanksgiving, people are probably scurrying around, got a lot going on.
Sure.
You know, we have a tendency, I think, unfortunately, to take, you know, some of the most amazing things that we've done as a people for granted. And, you know, what we did in the 18th century, we changed the trajectory of human events. When we brought forward a government of the people, by the people, for the people, when we did this, when, you know, that was the era of divine right of kings and queens and aristocracies. And before us, there was a belief it just had to be that way because, you know, in the absence of a monarch, we were going to have chaos.
Chaos, yeah.
And we just wouldn't be able to have order. And, you know, we boldly stated, no, we can do this. We can govern ourselves. And the heads of state of Europe scoffed at us. They laughed. They said, there's no way that'll work out. It's gonna devolve. It's going to be in the Civil War. And then they'll beg for us to come back. And we know that never happened.
Right.
In fact, not only did we survive, but we have flourished. And we have shown the world. You know, as young a country as we are, and, you know, actually, in the span of history, we are a young country.
We are very young.
It really struck me one time when I was on leave as a young lieutenant. It seems like a million years ago, but I was in London, and it was the spring of 1989, and I was sitting at a pub, and I was on my second pint, and so it could have been the beer, but it struck me that this establishment that I was sitting in, this bar was older than our country.
Right.
I mean, they could trace the ownership of this pub back to the 1300s.
Wow.
And I was like, golly, this pub is older than our country. So, you know, we are a young country.
We are.
But even as young as we are, we have, fact, we have the longest standing stable constitution in the world right now. There is no other nation that has had such stability, such prosperity, such freedom, and such opportunity, and that wasn't just by chance. It was really, we were so fortunate that we were set up for success with the founders. When they brought forward that Declaration of Independence, you know, they said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Those were radical words for the 18th century. Those were radical words, and we put a government with a constitution that limited the power of government and that had checks and balances with state sovereignty and also with a Bill of Rights that were for us. This was what really changed the course of political history in the world. And we have to, you know, every generation, we have a responsibility to strengthen that social contract. And I wanted to do my part, and our team, you know, we wanted to restore faith in that, in our ability to be self-governing. And so that meant that after the election, we work for everyone. In concert with these principles, I have had always two principles when it comes to voting on bills and amendments. I have two basic principles. One is it constitutional? Mm-hmm. And the second is it good for my people? If the answer is yes to both, then I voted for it. I didn't care which party authored it. If the answer was no to one of them, then I opposed it. So when that all racked and stacked over the course of 6 years, I was the most independent Republican down there.
Yes, you were.
And, you know, it's because there were times when my party wanted me to do things that I knew were either an overreach, the Patriot Act, for example. I fought mm-hmm. and bled for this country. But in my view, that Patriot Act has two stipulations in there that are unconstitutional with the Fourth Amendment, that you have the right to be reasonably secure, and the government needs a warrant before they read your email or listen to your phone conversations. So that was a situation where my party wanted me to do something, and I said, doesn't mean I don't love you. I love everybody, but I, you know, I don't work for you. I work for the people in upstate New York, right. And I follow the Constitution, and I'm voting no. And there are a number of cases like that. Most recently, this past summer, our party wanted me to support the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it's a good agreement at all. In fact, I think it's a bad one as it's constructed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I opposed that. And, you know, there was some heartburn over that.
Did you take some heat for some of this?
I did. Yeah. I did. But, you know, I mean,
good for you.
But I never forget. I mean, this is actually one of the values of term limiting yourself, is that the leadership down there, and they're good folks, but, you know, they use tools, right? They use incentives and disincentives.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things they'll try to do is influence you. We'll use a nice word.
Yeah.
With, you know, some kind of possibility in the future, or they'll sanction you. And, you know, I'm like, look, I've already term limited myself. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Right.
So I think that's important for my independence. It was important to my integrity that I didn't owe them anything. As much as I thanked everyone for any support they gave, I didn't mm-hmm. owe them anything. I owed all my allegiances to the people here. And I hope that people will feel that this is possible, that, you know, not only what they did to get me elected, but even against all odds, the change now nationally. You know, the people's voice does matter. You know, who the people come out and vote for makes a difference. Anything to add, Mayor?
I agree
with everything you say.
Yeah. So, look, you know, we are excited, and, you know, we have about 6 more weeks of work, and, you know, we're going to finish strong and transition well, and then look into the future.
We're going to talk about all that.
Okay.
We're going to cut you off right now. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about the future, what the future holds for Chris and Mary Jo, and how your marriage. I mentioned, you know, you're married 20 years, and that's awesome. And it's, you know, I won't say it's unusual, but it is a little unusual, especially in given the political life. And you know, I want to get Mary Jo's perspective on, you know, first you're a military wife, and then you go to being the wife of a. And I don't even want to use this term, but as of an elected official, we'll say, you know, and someone who is serving in Washington, so he's having to be in two places and your busy schedule. So we're going to talk about all that and more. But
Justin and I usually have our guests pick the song or what they would like to hear, and Mary Jo, I believe, said Counting Crows, so I picked Hanging Around because we know that's what the congressman is not going to be doing, just hanging around. So do stay tuned. You're listening to Something to Talk About on 90.7 FM WGXC. We'll be right back. Let's see if I can get this to work. Welcome back, everybody. This is Holly Tanner. Something to talk about here on 90.7 FM WGXC. We are having a wonderful conversation with Congressman Chris Gibson and wife Mary Jo, who are in studio with us live. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for listening. Hope you're enjoying. So, Chris, you were talking right before the break and hanging around. So, you had mentioned, you know, you did term limit yourself, and one of the comments, and you did that right from the very get-go, one of the comments that I got on Facebook was, you know, and a lot of positive, obviously, feedback, and as I was saying, you know, some of the words describing you, you know, honest, integrity, hardworking, selfless. But so Wendell said, you know, this is one promise, this term limit thing that we would have forgiven you for this one minor indiscretion if you decided to stay on. But, you know, what was your reasoning behind these term limits?
Well, you know, the important thing is,
do you think it's a good idea for Trump? He's talking about term limits.
Yes,
isn't he?
Absolutely. And, you know, look, when he said we need to drain the swamp, he's right. And when he said the system is rigged, he's right. It needs to change. I mean, look, I have been a strong advocate for reform. I think we've moved the ball a little bit. I mean, maybe a yard or two. There's a long way to go here. Term limits, I think, would be very important. And here's why. Because our service is not about us. Our service is about the people we work for. You know, when our founders put in the Constitution that we weren't going to have titles, there was a reason why. I mean, because we truly believed in our aspirational document that we were created equal. I mean, certainly that doesn't mean we have pure equality because, you know, all humans are different, but we have equal opportunity. And, you know, I think that we need to address this. We've morphed in our country. We've evolved. We have this, candidly, this cult of personality now. We were not meant to have that. You know, we were meant to be a rugged people that really was, we were formed on a meritocracy, that every generation had to earn it and every person had to earn it. And I think that, you know, unfortunately in our system today, that there is the power of incumbency is one that is so hard for anyone to overcome.
Yeah.
I mean, we did beat together. You know, we beat an incumbent in 2010, but it's very rare.
It is.
I mean, re-election rates for Congress, you know, people talk about the aggregate, the institution, run it down, everything else. But, I mean, the re-election rate for Congress is like over 95%. So, you know, and look, in a perfect world, we wouldn't need term limits. We don't live in a perfect world.
Right.
We live in the real world. And I think that that's important because it really needs to be about the people. It's about when we formed a self-governing nation, we were meant to have citizen legislators to serve for a period of time, to never lose their focus, and to come back home.
To go back home. Yeah. And so you'll be you're finishing out your 6 weeks. I know you're going to go out with a bang. You know, you're not, as Brad mentioned, you're not kicking up your heels and saying, well, I'm done, you know, that's over with. It's not over yet for you. You're still going down to Washington.
Yeah, we have at least two more legislative weeks, possibly three, and we have those two big bills that I mentioned that we hope to get into law. By the way, that 21st Century Cures bill, it looks like there's a good chance we're going to actually merge that with a mental health bill that I was part author of as well, that's really important. You know, we need to make progress here. We've made some progress, I think, as a country in the issue of neuroses, but we're, I think, still far behind when it comes to psychoses. And in fact, this is an area that, you know, my wife has been instrumental.
Right.
You know, what a great advisor, life, you know, companion and lover. I mean, just amazing. But she's given me tremendous insights as it relates to mental health. And, you know, that's, I think, made a difference as well.
Sure, absolutely. So how do you feel about this, Mary Jo? You know, you've
transition?
Been a military wife and then the wife of a congressman, and now he's going to come home and help you grocery shop.
That's right. Stand right behind me.
Day-to-day living. It's going to be a little different, though, isn't it?
Well, you know, we've been fortunate throughout our journey together as a married couple that we have made time for each other, and he has made time as a father. So we've been fortunate. We've been very, very creative over these years. And I even just now, just speaking of currently him being in Congress, you know, people see his public schedule, which is remarkable, what he can cover in a day. But
it
people
is.
Don't
it's crazy.
See his private schedule, where he may fly in and go directly to our children's play and be the usher, or he may run to the baseball game before he's going to go and speak at something. So his ability to be present to people really is grounded in his ability to be present to his family. That's where I feel like he has the priorities that are straight. And
do you think it's going to be odd, like on January 2nd, you know, you're going to wake up and be like, what do I have to do today? Oh, right. Wait. you know, maybe I'll cook breakfast. Yeah. Right. I'm sure you do that now.
But, you know, he's,
it's going to be a, an adjustment. Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
he
nice.
Cooks, he bakes. No. But I think, you know, what we've done over the years is with the military, as we raised our family, we were, where we were stationed, sometimes we were in a unit. And then other times he would be doing academia. So that made it quite conducive to raising a family because we had in and out of unit situations, which gives you kind of a downtime and regrouping time. And so when you, Congress, we called it going to D.C. Monday through Thursday and Tuesday through Friday, mm-hmm. whichever the week might be, mm-hmm. That was considered a mini deployment. You know, and
sure.
we all just adapted, adjusted, and that's how it went. Now, he truly slept on the floor.
I was going to mention that. You slept, and saw the area. My family right. and I, we went and visited, and yeah.
You started out with
the
mattress. Right. He was blown up in the closet. And then he went to a mattress, bunk bed mattress on the floor, and then his final term, we got him a cot.
I needed
you know?
That. I tell you, I needed that. When I turned 50, I was like, I'm sleeping on the floor. This isn't, you know,
let's just
it wasn't working
anymore.
Out, you know, my back. So I got a nice cot. I was in high cotton at that point.
Let's just say he is so happy to come home. Let's just say that, you know. But it worked well for him. Just talking about, I think for his focus, because he was down there to work, and so it worked well, and schedules. So that, you know, he could zero in on what he was doing and mm-hmm. then and the return. For our children, the opportunities they've experienced through this and being able to understand the political world and serving others. I think Chris has been a great example of that. Through the campaign process, you know, we would discuss what was going on. They were a part of the discussions, but they knew to be respected of the other person who was also running, and they didn't necessarily go to debates he was at,
mm-hmm.
but they would, you know, they would sometimes view it on television and maybe text their ideas to him and so forth afterwards. But it's, they were part of the process, and they have a great understanding. And they also, as I said, perks when their eighth grade classes, each of the kids experienced through Ichabod Crane, their eighth grade classes going to D.C., he was able to give them the tour. I don't think
That's
I've seen
awesome.
Him more nervous sometimes than that opportunity when you're touring your 14-year-old's classroom.
Right.
And he wanted to get it right and make sure they were educated and learned about why they were there, how our government works. And he made that happen for them. And
I always enjoyed that, too.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. I went into schools about 2 to 3 times a month. We have about 100 school districts that either comprise the 20th and then the 19th uh-huh. congressional district, and I've been to almost every one.
Wow.
And, you know, I thought that was really important, the engagement with our youth.
It
I think
is.
It's important to our transparency and accountability and also inspiration. You know, you hear people say, well, you know, not enough people vote. We need to change the laws to make it easier to vote. It's actually easier to vote than it is to take a book out of the library. You know,
yes,
I said to
right.
my colleagues and say, the issue isn't the barriers to vote. It's we need to inspire them.
Right.
They have to believe in the people they're voting for.
And understand what importance
it
is.
I think that was
yeah.
the biggest reason why we don't get people to turn out is not because it's hard to vote. It's because they don't believe in the candidate.
Sure.
So, you know, I took that on as a personal mission is to really try to go and touch – really to be into these schools and to really inspire our youth to want to be part of this process.
Yeah. And he adapted really well to whatever grade level he was at, from like fifth grade to high school to college. And
yeah.
interesting questions
it's
that would come his way.
The nature of the questions would change.
Oh, I bet.
Like, you know, when I'm
sure.
with seniors in high school or college, I mean, probably 80 to 90% of the questions were political for good reason.
Sure.
Right? When I was with like fourth and fifth graders, to be like, what's it like to be on a tank? Yeah. What's it like to jump
right.
out of an airplane?
Right.
Did you have a gun?
It's
like, yeah. It was so yeah. adorable. The questions were like, you know, they would ask the greatest questions.
That is
so
funny. Well, I do I have to ask you a question, and this is from Carl off of Facebook. What is your proudest accomplishment from your term, your entire serving in Congress?
I would say just the service. It's look, I could mention probably about a dozen major pieces of legislation between the Farm Bill, the VA reform, and the national security bills and the infrastructure bills and rolling back Common Core from the federal perspective. I mean, all those bills were very important, those veterans bills that we worked on together. But you know what? You know, in addition to all that legislation, the casework that we do every day, that really helps advocate for people. I think about this guy, Mr. Cooley, who was suffering from Agent Orange exposure from Vietnam, and the government was denying him benefits. It was wrong. We interceded on his behalf, and he got his benefits. And sadly, he only lived for another year and a half, and he went back to heaven because he was afflicted with these cancers that come from the Agent Orange exposure.
Right.
But, you know, to see the look in these, you know, guys and gals' eyes when they finally see justice, because, you know, is it important? Is the health care? Of course it's important.
Right.
You know, but as important is the validation.
It's knowing that somebody cares.
Yeah, it's the mm-hmm. validation of knowing that they, right. you know, maybe they weren't a casualty during the actual operation, mm-hmm. but we still have veterans dying from the Vietnam War.
And that's our responsibility.
And, you know, when they feel, when they get that benefit, it's the government saying, you were wounded. You know, you in the line of duty, you gave of yourself. And so, and I would say that more than anything, I think that service is to be able to step forward and advocate and stand for and fight for them. And when that justice comes through, that's a source of enormous reward. And I thank my staff for the work that they've done on that.
Is there something that you would have liked to have seen come to fruition or get accomplished that you weren't able to?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, and some of the things we're still talking about, which is good. I mean, I was a very aggressive advocate for defense reform. And it was frustrating for me for years. And now it turns out this final bill, it looks like we may actually get some of these reforms that I've been advocating for some time as far as reorganizing the Pentagon. Because as strongly as I believe in peace through strength and a strong military, I also believe that there's waste in that Pentagon that we need to get at. So we have an acquisitions reform package in this latest bill that I'm prayerful the president does not veto. And I think that's going to be important reform. And then, look, some of these things that President-elect Trump is talking about now as far as draining the swamp. Mm. These are really important initiatives to help restore our faith, you know, whether it be the lobbying ban, moving that from 1 to 5 years or the term limits. I hope we go further than that. I think we have to change the way we send representatives to Washington, D.C. We need independent redistricting. We need campaign finance reform of the right kind. I'm not for public financing of campaigns because, heck, mm-hmm. what do politicians use most of the money for? Negative ads.
Right.
Why would we give our taxpayer right. dollars to politicians to run negative ads?
Right.
It's excessive and crazy. But what we do need to do, I think, is cap. I mean, look, you can't watch a football game without right. seeing 97 attack ads.
And can we also put a time limit?
You know,
like, you have a month.
It's ridiculous.
And $1 million that you can spend.
We've
That's
got
it.
A limit. We've got to limit those expenditures. We should report every donation, and there should be no outside money because it loses accountability. You know, you see, you know, you talk to even the candidates here in the 19th
mm-hmm.
district.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the preponderance of the ads obviously were negative, but, you know, right. the two candidates in many cases didn't even approve of them. They
right.
were outside spending.
Outside sources.
That should change. So I hope that we see the impetus and the momentum for change. And, you know, I'll just say this on that score that, you know, sometimes the Lord works in ways we don't fully understand or appreciate. But I'll say this, that I'm very thankful that, you know, we just lost my mom.
I know.
She's back in heaven now, and she was such an incredible
very
inspiration
sorry.
For me. What a wonderful yeah. woman. You know, just really miss her. But I think about, you know, what would – let's just say, you know, can you imagine if I was running again? Thank God I wasn't.
Right.
I mean, she spent her last days in the hospital fighting cancer for the fourth time.
Ugh.
She beat cancer 3 times.
Wow.
The third time she beat cancer in 2005, the doctor said, we can't explain this.
Wow.
She was in stage 4 cancer. We can't explain this.
Wow.
She got back. But, you know, she was fighting it the fourth time, and she still loved her shows. So I would sit there with her, and Mom, you know, we're talking and everything. And, you know, I must have seen 57 million
yeah.
commercials.
Those ads.
Can you imagine if my mom was on her deathbed and every other commercial,
right.
somebody's kicking my skull in?
You're right, right,
I was
right.
like, thanking God that I was not running,
sure.
you know? So,
I'm sure,
you know,
I'm sure.
So, look, I do think there are things that need to get done.
What do you think is the greatest issue facing this country? Is it jobs? Is
well,
it this division? Do you see is there a division?
I put number one is just our faith in ourselves. Now, I am hopeful that we're overcoming that. I mean, that's why I put that such an issue, because candidly, we face tougher times in our country's history. When you look at the debt to GDP ratio, because I'm going to talk about the deficit and the debt in a moment, but, you know, the debt to GDP ratio was actually steeper in 1945 than it is now.
Really?
And look, we faced very dark days in the parts of 1942 when it looked like it was going to be very hard for us to defeat fascism. You know, we had troopers in Valley Forge way back when that didn't even have shoes.
Right.
So we went through a depression where 25% of Americans were out of work. Another 25% were underemployed. That's half of Americans not living there to their potential. We've had tougher times. What's different now is this is the first time we've ever questioned our ability to overcome these challenges. And that's really where I think the biggest issue, and part of the reason why I'm writing a book now, is I really want to inspire people to believe in this exceptional way of life. And so I would say that as far as just the belief in ourselves, and I think that's so important. Then, you know, I have to say the deficit and the debt worries me because, and I didn't think it was talked about enough in this campaign. Mm-hmm. We've cut the deficit by 70%. But we can't rest on that. We're not back to a balanced budget yet.
Right.
We need to get back to a balanced budget because, look, when you look at the history of mankind and you look at Rome and look at Greece and, you know, look at Great Britain and you look at over time these republics, and there hasn't been a republic as flourishing as ours. But still, when you look at the history of mankind, republics have fell because of two basic reasons: fiscal and moral decay.
Mm.
And, you know, we're on a path that concerns me. I think we have taken some good steps to get back to a balanced budget, but we cannot rest on that. We need to get back to a balanced budget because if we end up in a debt spiral, none of this is going to matter. You know, because look, is there a Rome today? Of course there's a Rome. Is it the Rome of, you know, two millennia ago?
Right.
No, it's not. It's a different Rome. Now, we don't want to be a second or third rate country. We want the American dream for our children and grandchildren, and that is the greatest country in the history of mankind with amazing opportunity. And to do that, we need to work, and we work hard.
So you mentioned you're writing a book. Is there a future in politics for Chris Gibson again?
Well, most immediately, no. I mean, most immediately, what I need to do is finish strong and transition well with John Faso. And look, you know, this was a decision that Mary Jo and I made. We feel very strongly we made the right decision because, you know, of all the responsibilities I've had in my life, combat commander, West Point professor, congressman, the most important, husband and father. And,
we realized when Chris was doing the committee process, it really allowed him an opportunity to see. And we appreciate all those who support him.
This is the
committee process
looking at potentially running for governor.
Right.
And so he really saw that what it would require as 7 days a week and like
straight.
2 years straight.
Not two and a half. With a 15-year-old at home,
I mean, he really needs his dad right now.
So there's that. I mean, so now he graduates, God willing, in June of 2019. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, will be another decision point for us. But, you know, most immediately what we're going to do is finish strong, transition well, you know, be the best husband and father I can be the best teacher I can be. I'll have a couple courses up at Williams College, do a really good job on this book that'll be out next fall.
Next fall,
and, I'm excited to get that out there and hope it has a national exposure because I'm very passionate.
Have to have you back on to talk about your book fall.
I'm very passionate about this. The first book that I published was in 2008. I was in between war deployments, and I had a lot on my chest I needed to get off. I didn't think that we were – I mean, I had major issues with the way the Bush administration was proceeding with foreign policy and prosecuting the war, and I needed to write about it, and I did, in securing the state. And I feel that same way now. I mean, I've got a lot of things I feel very passionate about and, you know, ways that we can bring our country together to revitalize the American dream and strengthen our republic and the founding principles that made such a difference for us. So that's going to be important too. But, you know, that – all of this, I think I'll be able to go from working about 90 hours a week to about 45 and really have a very flourishing life with our family.
Right,
and then when we get to the summer of 2019, we'll take a look. You know, if things go well, Connor, I mean, you know, it's possible that we could get back in.
Moments matter.
Right.
Exactly. And I think it's important to be present to where we're at right now and then make an assessment. When they're all off to their things, then reassess from
there.
You don't want to miss the time.
Great news. No, you don't. And I think that it just adds to both of you, and it speaks to the type of people you are and, you know, what kind of service you did for your country and family man. Family comes first. That's right. And I just have to say, for my part, you know, I've had the pleasure of I first ran in 2002. But so 2010, I ran with Chris and, you know, it was an amazing experience. And I've certainly appreciated everything you've done and getting to, you know, do events with you and learn from you and how you serve. And I think this county and the district has certainly
recognized, you know, what a great congressman you were and all the public service you've done. So it's been an honor for me to work with you, and I hope that that doesn't go away. We don't Holly, be strangers, you two. Yeah.
And Holly, we are so thankful to you and to all those out there. Just the wonderful support that we've received through this journey.
Mm-hmm. And it's been a lot of fun. It has. And
thank you.
Go away. And we are out of time, folks. We could probably sit here for another hour or so and talk more stuff, because I can tell Chris just has so much on his mind, and Mary Jo, but we are out of time. So I just want to say again, our deepest sympathies in the loss of your mom. I know that's difficult for you to go through, but we appreciate you taking the time to come in today. And Mary Jo's dad's been sitting here quietly in the background, making sure nothing inappropriate was out. Truly.
Thank you, Papa George.
So
thank you, Holly. Thank you. God bless
you.
And God bless all the listeners out there, too. And happy Thanksgiving to you and your families. Wishing you all the best.
Little message, happy Thanksgiving. And if you are, you know, they call tonight. Thanksgiving Eve is amateur night. But please be careful, everybody. If you are going out, be safe. Get a ride home. Don't push your luck, because we don't want that. And happy Thanksgiving. Thanks again, guys, for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.